The True False podcast is made possible with the support of the University of Missouri and the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival.
For me, it's basically an ethical standpoint that the people appearing in the film are far more important than the film itself.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. In this episode, we talk with Chico Pereira, the director of Don Quixote, which was part of the 2017 True False Film Fest. Chico uses his upbringing in a Spanish village as the jumping-off point for his two nonfiction films. In Don Quixote, he follows his estranged uncle Manolo, who sets off to fulfill his dream of traveling to America to walk the Trail of Tears with his donkey, Gorion. But before Manolo can cross the Atlantic, the challenges start to pile up. Chico spoke with True False programmer Abby Sun about working with family, both in front of and behind the camera. And there's just a little warning on this episode. We've got one swear word that comes up a couple of times.
With the involvement of your family members, you have cousins working with you, and all of the catering is provided by your family members. I'm imagining all of this nice home cooking that you must have been eating during the filming.
It is a big deal. We never eat sandwiches. You know, every day is about a table, and we have a table, and we eat like a family does. And then even we might take a siesta, depending on the reality of the shooting. But we do, you know, we do take that seriously. I don't know. I think it was Claude Chabrol or some of those new wave French guys that said, you know, you can never be sure that you're going to make a great film, but you can at least ensure that you have a great shooting, you know, and that's basic for me, to feel that we're doing something that is worth in its own. You know, it's not just like we're doing this just to make them a film. We're actually living through these very meaningful encounters, and that's important to keep in mind, I think.
Yeah, especially since most of your crew is not from there other than you and your family. So this way you're having them live this sort of life that they are also filming, which feels like a more authentic encounter than just swooping in and being like a film crew and then leaving.
Yeah, totally. Also, being from a mining community, I'm very aware of the sense of extraction. You know, I've seen for so long these mining companies everywhere, really, that they just go to a community, they make shit lots of money, and then they leave, and the return to the community is very little. As a filmmaker, I could also do the same somehow. You go to a village, then you get your material, you make your film, and then you tour International Film Festival, and you talk about those people and their problems or their virtues and whatever, and what happens to them. So I'm very conscious of not practicing extractive practices. You know, sorry about the repetition, but yeah, not to be extractive in filmmaking practices. So sometimes we just don't take camera. We just go and cook with the subject, or just like go for a walk, or spend some time talking about something different rather than just like being filming there and being behind the cameras and talking amongst ourselves when we film them eating or something. And the same, you know, the world premiere of Pablo's Winter was in the village. It was great, you know, to see these very tall, like almost 6 feet miners, you know, come to you with tears in their eyes and saying thank you for telling our story. But we have done charity screenings the last two summers in Spain of both Don Quixote and Pablo's Winter, and we created around like a $7,000 kind of charity money for social organizations, you know. So somehow we try to contribute to the village and have them also as a first audience. So that also determines my approach to filmmaking. You know, I work with simple stories and I work with humor because I have this mythical figure of my granny in my head I want my granny to understand my films. And regardless of how much I love weird stuff and experimental stuff, I still ought to put forth my love for filmmaking within the stories that are simple enough that people in the village won't feel alienated from. It might change, but as long as I work with people from the village in this way, I want them to be able to fully understand those stories.
Let's talk about the title of your film. So it sounds like a joke. It sounds like, yes. I mean, it sounds like somebody had a funny idea to call the film Don Quixote, and then you just stuck with it. Is that how it happened?
Yeah, it happened that way. It happened like, look, Don Quixote, open another beer. I think we got it. it started like a joke, but then we analyzed it. You know, I thought, okay, it's a catchy name. There are like so many films going to festival, going to for funding, have a catchy name, you know, it wouldn't hurt. But then we thought that it made sense, you know, because Don Quixote, that name is almost like a symbiosis of obviously donkey, the animal, and then Don Quixote, the Spanish character, you know, probably the most famous character in the Spanish literature. And then we thought somehow, you know, it's a word that refers to both, and trying to kind of give them equal importance, you know, or equal weight in the title. And that was one intention from the beginning, just to depict the donkey with as much complexity as we could, as we were trying to do with the man too. You know, it's not an adaptation at all of Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. Whoever trying to find an adaptation in the film would be really disappointed. But it is, you know, it is in a way that Don Quixote also has been very identified with madness. I don't think it's the most accurate kind of reading of Don Quixote, but it's one of the most famous or one of the first things that come to our head. And Manolo has been very eccentric all his life, but in a very, pure way. With the donkey trying to go to America, I realized how those things happen. We were having a conversation and he said, it's all logic. He said, okay, my best friend is a donkey. I always walk with him. I will have to go to America. That could be very eccentric, but the way it happened is just like the most organic way. So we thought that plan of going with a donkey to America, it really fitted the quixotic or quixotesque kind of approach. But most of all, I think Don Quixote is a guy, the real Don Quixote, the literature character, is a guy that doesn't accept to live in the time he lives. You know, he still wants to belong to the old cavalry.
Yeah, but he's looking backwards.
He's looking backwards. He's looking as a way of life that has long gone. And in every adventure, he goes out to find it. You know, Manolo is forward-looking in many ways, in technology and as a person, but the way he wants to walk, you know, just by sleeping wherever the light comes, you know, and to roam freely, that's not possible to do in Spain. And I think it's possible to do anywhere. In Spain, you know, all the public paths or many public paths being like gate off or fenced off, you cannot really go through. Landowners have like misappropriated those places. So you're walking through a public path and then you find a gate, you have to come back going through a road. It's stressing, it's dangerous. So you cannot do those things. And then the same with America, we thought, okay, let's get into a boat and let's do it, you know. And it was very more and more restriction. People, obviously travel agents, they would laugh at us, would hang up the phone because thought that they would be, Manolo was joking. And then there were lots of 60 days quarantine, like 30 in Amsterdam in Europe, 30 in New York or Miami, have to pay like $15,000, lots of paperwork. So they don't tell you not to do it, but it makes it impossible for a normal person to do it. So there was this restriction of movement for this kind of sense of roaming freely that we thought it really resonates with one of the main Don Quixote themes of the novel.
Right, and then the book also starts out as like a found document too, so it has those interesting like docufiction strappings. I'm curious about keeping the name because it does lead people, I think, to think that your film is an adaptation somehow. But more interestingly, I realized when I was at Yamagata, I don't know how they were translating it into Japanese, but I don't think that the pun was coming through. People recognized that the film was like Don Quixote-esque, even without realizing that that's what the title referred to.
I guess it's an English title. In Spain, doesn't work either, you know, because donkey is burro. But I think donkey is quite universal word, or I don't know. But also, that's another reality of my films or our films. They're made in rural Spain, but the money never come from rural Spain or even from Spain, because there's no money for those things, you know? So this is a German, UK co-production. Pablo's Winter was also Scottish, and with UK Scottish money. So I guess we live in this more globalized approach. So it makes sense that the film is in English, right?
Do you think that's necessary for non-extractive filmmaker to engage in this way beyond just the film itself?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think, you know, charity is it's more fraught than what it seems on the outside. I don't think you have to do that. But obviously, you might understand that you have, you know, people, oh, we would like to watch the film, or we would like to kind of, when are you going to screen it here? Then for people that have been kind of like helping me, I would never set a ticket, you know, in the village to make money out of the watching, you know, the film. But obviously, I know that they are like, it's the summer, there are people from the city and from Barcelona, Madrid, that come to the village. I thought, there's going to be like 600 people watching the film. We could do something. Why don't we talk to social organization and maybe... So it was more like an idea of a possibility that we could create wealth. But I think not being extractive means it's an ethical standpoint that starts from day one of the conception of your idea and how you're going to... What's going to be the agency and the role and the treatment of the characters or the subjects for the film. And, you know, for me, documentary and fiction, they are not separated in any creative method or technique. For me, it's basically an ethical standpoint that you have clear from the beginning that the people working and the people appearing in the film are far more important than the film itself.
Coming up after the break, Chico talks about his uncle.
We used to call Manolo Tio Coño, which basically means Uncle Fuck, in a sense that he was all the time like, fuck!
First, a word from our sponsor. Hey listeners, it's Allison, letting you know that this episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the University of Missouri. That is, in fact, where we are making the show right now. We're here in the KBIA studios at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, which is famous for the Missouri Method. Here to tell us what the heck the Missouri Method is our podcast producer and MU journalism student, Abby Ivory Gagne.
Hey.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
What's been like a highlight for you?
I came in for a reporting shift one day. It was my second ever, and I got assigned a breaking story, and I followed it. And then the next morning, I was in line at Starbucks when somebody texted me and said they heard my story on NPR.
Sounds like you're getting a lot of good experience. Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Allison.
And we also want to thank the University of Missouri, home to the Missouri Method, for their generous support of this podcast. This episode of the True False podcast is brought to you by the Donald W. Reynolds Journalism Institute. Here to tell us more is the RJI Executive Director, Randy Picht. Hey, Randy.
Hey, Allison.
Can you tell us what are the RJI Fellowships?
They're a great opportunity for folks in the industry that have big ideas or innovative ideas that they want to try to bring to journalism. And they're a great way for RJI to work on its mission of helping journalism have a long and bright future. Our fellows work on innovative projects that could involve new strategies for the industry, and not necessarily just from journalism. We're always very interested in interdisciplinary projects. We've worked with artists, technologists, entrepreneurs, along with folks from the New York Times and the Washington Post. If it's a good idea that we think can help journalism, sign us up.
That sounds awesome, especially the interdisciplinary part. Are there any projects that you've gotten to witness that you're really excited about?
We did one with an artist that tried to create a piece that could run in the paper that people could take home and frame. It was about gun control. A lot of the interdisciplinary projects get involved with engagement, and we like to think that RJI offers the most flexible journalism fellowships around.
Very Midwestern of us.
That's right.
The True False podcast is sponsored by the Reynolds Journalism Institute. You can find out more at rjionline.org. That's rjionline.org. Welcome back to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofelt. Let's get back to Abby Sun's interview with Chico Pereira. Chico's film, Don Quixote, follows his 73-year-old uncle, Manolo, and Manolo's longtime companion, the donkey, Gorion.
I remember one anthropology teacher here in the University of Santa Cruz in California. He told me, a little bit like joking, or maybe not, he told me that if I was trying to learn how to be a man, you know, by just like finding these older male models, you know. And sometimes I fantasize with that idea and I say, yeah, maybe I could buy a donkey and smoke wisdom on the top of the donkey. And and who knows, you know, just do a combination of the two characters. But with Manolo, the story was very different. Manolo is really a family member. He's my godfather. He's my uncle. And it was very, very important when I was a kid. It was very important for me and for two other nephews. Well, three other nephews. One, unfortunately, is not with us anymore, and Don Quixote is dedicated to him. And the other two, we were Manolo's kids. Manolo has two daughters, but he doesn't have sons. And we were kind of half their sons, half their animals. You know, when we were kids, we always talk about amongst ourselves, saying, why Uncle Manolo treats us a little bit like he treats his dogs? And we couldn't really understand. But Manolo was kind of very special. He took us to the countryside to sleep outside. Great, you know, like a hero, like a giant for us. And suddenly when we were 8 years old and we stopped seeing him, we didn't really understand why or what was going on. What had happened is Manolo had divorced from my auntie, and it was a bit of a terrible family crisis. This is also early 80s in Spain. So divorce is not something very kind of like well considered. And at some point we don't understand. We don't know what happened, but we just see and experience the effect of not seeing him. And that situation happens like for 25 years, you know, like we move away from the village, go to the city to study in the university. Then I move abroad, Manu move abroad as well. We didn't have any relation with him, but funny enough, the three of us became kind of like filmmakers. And I think it has something to do with Manolo, with Manolo's kind of like storytelling, and Manolo's always kind of fulfilling and feeding our imagination. So at some point in 2012, I go to see Manolo at his house, and I said to him that it's been terrible all these years. It would be really nice to, you know, reconnect with him. And I suggest, you know, after having the experience of filming in my village and reconnecting with my home village and with my neighbors, I suggest that maybe film and filmmaking could be that way, you know, could be a way to reconnect and do something together. Manolo always in his life had this American hat and poncho. So he was already kind of like a Western character. But this time he had a donkey, you know. After his second heart attack, family members gave him a donkey as a present so the donkey could carry his stuff when he's on walking routes. And I told him that we should go, you know, and do one of those routes that he loves in America, the one of the Trail of Tears that he kind of like mentioned in the past. He said, well, Chico, I would love to do that, but I always walk with my donkey. So if I were to go there, I would have to take my donkey. At some point, I realized as a filmmaker that that's a great kind of hook to start making a film, and we try, and for so long we see ourselves going with our donkey through Manhattan, you know, making our way out, you know, like Sylvania to the Stetson kind of like hats, factory, and I'm finding Latino ranchers and farmers along the way, and I'm doing the Trail of Tears. But then documentary is a discovery, and we discover other things.
So after you went and visited Manolo in 2012, did that sort of instigate everyone to reconnect with him?
Well, it slowly happened, but I think I was a little bit one of the latest one, because okay. I was living, at that time, for 9 years, living in Scotland. While another cousins were living in Spain, they managed to see him, and they have started kind of a little bit of a reconnection with him. But it was a curious thing, because even when we started this, the way it would work is like we would go to his place, and then he would prepare a very nice kind of like meal, and then he would open a very nice bottle of wine, and everything was like he had a great time. But we knew, you know, we knew that we used to call Manolo Tio Coño, which basically means Uncle Fuck, in a sense that he was all the time like, fuck! It was always very, very
he
short.
He causes quite a bit, yes, in the film.
Yeah, but it wasn't possible to access that part of his personality just by going to his house. You know, everything was kind of like nice. We were all very happy to start kind of like talking again. So everything was like very celebratory. And it was through filmmaking that in some of the scenes we pissed him off so much that we really saw the Uncle Fuck coming through again. You know, that kind of, or Uncle Dumb, like Dumb It, you know, the way you want
damn it. Damn it, yeah.
It's Uncle Dumb It, you know, that probably could be the best translation. But it was then, you know, again through filmmaking that we were kind of accessing, that we knew, but we couldn't access just by visiting him and having meals together.
That's it for this episode of the True False podcast. Find our podcast on kbia.org and on iTunes. And join us next time as we discuss a different aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction storytelling. Thanks to Chico Pereira and Abby Sun for the interview. This episode was produced by Abby Ivory Gagna and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Femuliner. Our introduction was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. Special thanks to Catherine Wheeler. I'm Allison Kofeldt. Thanks for listening.